Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
In his Isaac Bell novels, Clive Cussler has brought the past to life in a series hailed as historical action-adventure fiction at its rip-roaring best. Now in The Assassin, Clive Cussler and Justin Scott return to the early days of Bell's career with a case that will pit him against a foe unlike any he's ever encountered. Clive Cussler is the author or co-author of over 50 previous books in 5 best-selling series, including Dirk Pitt, The Numa Files, The Oregon Files, The Isaac Bell Adventures, and The Fargo Adventures. His most recent New York Times best-selling novels from last year are Ghost Ship and The Eye of Heaven and Havana Storm. Again, the new book is The Assassin, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Clive Cussler back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Joe. The pleasure is mine.
Very nice to have you with us. So with this story, The Assassin, we go to 1905. Do you like being in that time frame?
Yes, I do. It all started, you know, it was a few years ago when I always wanted to do a Western. So I decided, okay, I'll start, but I didn't want to use stagecoaches and bandits and gunslingers and all that sort of thing. So I moved it up to 1906, where I could get in automobiles and telephones and, you know, things like that. So I thought that'd be a fun time. So that was called The Chase, and that introduced Isaac Bell. But I hadn't really planned on a series. I'd maybe hoped for one, but I thought this is just kind of a catharsis. I wanted to do a Western, even if it was a little later. So it just was a great fun to do. And then when I finished, the publisher said, can you make a series out of it? And so I figured, well, sure. So what we've done, it's a little different, is we're moving back and forth. He can start out in 1906, and then we got him, you know, like he's older in Prohibition and you know, younger in another book. So it's a great fun, and the research is fascinating on some of the subjects we come up with.
So let me just lay out basically what the book's about, and then we could talk about some of that research, because it's really fascinating. So Van Doren Agency has Isaac Bell as its private detective, and looking to land a government contract to investigate John D. Rockefeller's Standard Oil monopoly, and then the case takes a turn, and a rather deadly one at that. And what is it that wanted you to explore Rockefeller, to explore Standard Oil, and to look at that as a possibility?
Well, we always try to get into something of the era, and in this particular era, oil was the big thing, you know, Rockefeller and Standard and so forth. So that's why we use that one. Otherwise, sometimes we use coal, sometimes we use, you know, something else. But yes, this all had to do with the oil, big oil days when they were coming in, and Rockefeller was the nastiest man in the world, supposedly. But he wasn't really all that bad, but it was fascinating to do the research and get into it.
What is the idea of an assassin, someone who has this accuracy, an impossible long range, and is able to do these things? And then the questions, of course, come, who is he, and who is he killing for, and so forth. What fascinates you about that?
Well, I wish I could say, because the ending is the twist.
Right.
Thank you. But no, it was using the subject of another oil man, another oil company, and to get rid of, let's say, the big shots like Rockefeller, and who wanted to take over himself. And so he hires an assassin, so to speak.
So much of your career has been of action and adventure. Is that always the kind of book you wanted to write?
Yeah, it was so funny, because when I started out the first book, you know, I went to the publisher and it was told, don't waste your time writing adventure. It doesn't sell. And it's like what my wife told me when I was writing. She said, don't get your hopes up. Nothing will ever come of it. And so it was kind of an uphill battle there. But it was funny, back in the 1970s, you couldn't sell an adventure book to a publisher. But it the whole stage has changed because there are a lot of Carey, Baldacci, a lot of great adventure writers have come on the scene.
What do you think it is about your books and about these characters that have really tickled the imagination of readers and saying, okay, we do like this, we do like adventure, and we do like what's happening?
Well, I've always looked upon myself more as an entertainer than a writer. And my job, of course, is to entertain the reader in such a manner that when he reaches the end, he feels he got his money's worth. So it's because adventure can spread. You can put it in any country, any cast of characters you want. It's a great possibility to you know, just go off and write whatever you want in a particular area that maybe hopefully has never been done before.
And you have so many interests. That's what's fascinating to me about your career, is that if it's going to look for shipwrecks, then you can incorporate that in the novel. If you have a fascination with cars, as you do, and collect these amazing vehicles, that you can include that in the books as well.
Yeah, I always include one of my cars. I had Dirk Pitt driving something that I didn't own, and then it hit me. Why does he, you know, drive one of my cars? And then the next thing that came out from that was Pitt was at a concourse meet with his automobile, and he went over to say hello to this fellow next to him, this old guy with a gray beard and the gray hair. And I don't know why I did it, but he went over and said, "Hello, my name's Dirk Pitt." And this old fellow said, "Hi, my name's Clive Cussler." And I thought, why did I do that? And then the more I thought about it, I'll leave it in for fun, you know. the publisher didn't like it, but the readers, my God, I got something like 500 or 600 letters on that.
That's great.
So I have to keep doing my walk-on. You know,
The Hitchcockian walk-on in your own novel.
Kind of, right.
And for you, the car fascination began when? Was that as a kid?
Yes, when I was in high school. Nobody ever heard of it. The first car I owned, I paid $15 for it. It was a 1923 Jewett. And then the next one I bought a big auburn limousine with vases in the back seat and mirrors and all sorts of things. And I drove that in high school. My buddies and I used to dress up like gangsters, overcoats, hats, fedoras, and smoke cigars. And I played the violin for about a year. It was a disaster. And so I got the violin down out of the garage. And so when we go to a football game, you know, we dress up like that. And it worked real well because the security guards never knew that I had beer and wine inside the violin case. And so that's when it started. And then I built a hot rod, a 36 Ford. And then I was hooked on, you know, cars even then. I tried to buy a 1908 taxicab for $80. And my dad wouldn't loan me the money, and so I always regretted that I missed that one. So, but no, I just, the old cars are just a masterpiece, particularly the classics of artistic mechanical background, and it's a fascinating subject, and it's becoming so popular now. You can't pick up the paper without finding a concourse somewhere in the city. So,
you have roughly how many cars in the collection now?
I think it's about 137.
Hmm. And many on display in the museum.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
I just stored them in a warehouse, but then my daughter said, "Why don't you make a museum?" And she's taken that over, and she's done a remarkable job. So
for you, day-to-day driving, what do you like to go out in?
I bought, back 2000, I bought a Jaguar sedan. And I'm still driving it 15 years later.
So when you come to write, and you said something a minute ago, when you make your cameo of just saying, you know, "Oh, what the hell," mm-hmm. you know, it's fun. But aren't you at the point with so many books and with, you know, 50-some books and after all these years, that you're at a point that you can pretty much do whatever you want?
Well, it is. But the problem is, after all these books, it's so hard not to use another plot. It's like when I'm writing, I think, "Oh, hell, I use the same paragraph 6 books back." And so it's really getting, the writing's you know, basically the same. But it's getting difficult to come up with a new plot because I've had 50 or 60 of them. So it really takes some time to do something unusual.
You now work with a co-author. You have not always done that, obviously. And then is Justin Scott worked with you on this book. So how do you employ a co-writer?
Well, first of all, I look to see if, you know, who's writing a good adventure and then contact him, and we go from there. But I usually come up with a plot, and then, you know, I get together with the co-writer, and we lay it out, and then he starts to write. And after 100 pages, he'll send it back to me. I'll make corrections or suggestions and what have you. And we just keep doing that till we finish the book. And I've been very fortunate because these fellows are, I think, half of them, well, maybe all of them are better than I am. But so it's great fun to work with, and we have a good time.
But what's fascinating about that process is that at no time do you feel that you are reading a book that has been written by anybody other than Clive Cussler.
Yeah, well, it's just, you call it just, you know, we might do a sentence a little differently, but once we get into the plot together, it's just like one person instead of two.
And that, I assume, is something that you do partially to keep up with the demand. You have the series, you have a publishing contract, there's people want the new book to come out, and yet, you know, how much can you do?
Well, that's true. But it works out very well, surprisingly, because when one finishes a book, I'm ready to go with the next one. So, and then, you know, working with different writers, you know, I can work with three of them at the same time. So we managed to make the deadlines.
And do you ever long for a day where you ever think to yourself, oh, okay, I wish maybe it's just me. You know, I just want to go back to just me writing this.
No, I never heard of that or felt that way. I'd like to retire, but they won't let me.
Because you said that at one point, right? Didn't you say I'm going to retire and then...
I can't do it. They just... The publisher, I think, would send the assassin out to shoot me.
So you're going to be doing, like when you do a book reading, you're going to be going to Poison Pen in your hometown in Arizona. And you go around, you do these book signings. What is it like to meet the fans, to meet the readers, and to talk to them about these series?
Oh, I enjoy that. I have great fun with people, and I always clown around with them, you know, during a book signing. But I don't really travel anywhere as much as I used to. I mean, now that I'm 83, it's a little more difficult.
Right. You don't want to put too many miles on the Jaguar.
Yeah. maybe like that woman with her Ferrari, I'll be buried in it.
Well, the new book is The Assassin. It's an Isaac Bell adventure, and it's published by Putnam. Clive Cussler, always a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for spending time with us. Best of luck with this and all the future stuff as well.
Pleasure's mine, Joe. Thank you so
much. Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Clive Cussler, author of The Assassin, just out from Putnam. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.